We're glad you're here today. Tom and I don't know how we do it exactly. We don't think alike. And he knows what I'm preaching on, but he doesn't know the specific text that I'll be using or anything. He just kind of knows where it's coming from. So as he designs our worship assembly, I'm always surprised by how many times he gets it really, really correct. The last song that we sang references the need for "Let There Be Light," and we're going to be in John chapter 1 today, so that's a really appropriate verse. But as one of the other statements that's made in that song, that just I like the prose in music, and the phrase "to flood the nations with grace and mercy" is just a boy. If you're going to have something that just sweeps through a land, that's the thing to have sweep through a land is grace and mercy. Well, I guess by show of hands, how many of you fell down this week? Good. Joe fell. Okay. Well, the rest of us all walked like real old people. Not necessarily all of us. Shirley told me she just didn't go anywhere, so that's how she avoided falling down. It was slick and cold. That's just kind of what happens to us this time of the year, I guess. But I don't hold the weatherman very often accountable for what they said, but I will have to admit I was a little resentful. They promised it'd get warmer than it did, and I was ready. John writes his book in a very special way. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that has been made. You know, it's difficult to read that without being reminded of Genesis 1 and some of the terminology that's there. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was formless and void, and darkness covered the face of the deep. And while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. There was evening, and there was morning, and there was the first day. Two things happen in these accounts that have similarity. One, in the creation account in Genesis 1, we're invited to look at the idea that from nothing at all, God created something. He made things appear, and it took place simply because He said, "This is what I want." And then the second thing is how important it is that light be there. One of the stories that Tom and Pam's family and our family reflect on is when our kids were, I don't know, maybe the oldest was, CW might have been 11 or 12, we took a day trip and went down to Alabaster Caverns. And if you haven't been there, it's down at Freedom, Oklahoma. It's not very far away. It's a place you probably ought to go. And the thing we remember about alabaster caverns is somebody had the bright idea to let all the kids get bull whips. And so you haven't lived until you've tried to ride home with a bunch of kids that have bull whips, and they're trying to learn how to snap them, and they don't know how to crack them. But, you know, their lack of success had nothing to do with their lack of effort. And so all the adults are walking around with sunglasses on and hoping they don't get their ears caught. And, you know, kids are popping bull whips. But at the alabaster caverns, one of the things that happens is you go down to the bottom and they shut the lights out. Now, some of you have been to Carlsbad. I'm just curious about this. How many have been to Carlsbad? That's a dark place when they shut the lights out. Growing up, we used to be in Tennessee and Kentucky and Missouri, and we'd go to Merrimack Caverns, and you know, I've been to caverns forever, and I suppose the reason for that is that it was always hot and we didn't have air conditioning, and caverns were places you could go, it was cool. But when you get in the bottom and they shut the lights out, do you remember how the guy does that? They always prep you. We want you to find a spot, have a seat, stand against the wall, grab hold of something, touch somebody. We're going to cut the lights out here in a minute, and it's going to be absolutely dark. There'll be no artificial light. And it's only going to last, and then they tell you how long they're going to shut it off. And when you're little and you haven't experienced it before, it's a shocking thing to be without light. And one of the first things that happens is your heart begins to race a bit. And you start blinking your eyes because the reality of it is setting in. And there's really no way that I can squeeze my pupils that anything happens. Some people begin to lose equilibrium. That's one of the reasons that they have you be seated or stand against a wall or something, because when you're pitched into absolute darkness, it's tough to find your way and to keep your balance. And so in both stories, we read about God doing something with light. In John's account, Jesus is the thing that makes everything. So in the Bible, in Genesis, when it says, "And in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth," it doesn't identify which of the Godhead does that, but John tells us that the creator of everything was Jesus. And so Jesus initiates everything that has been made. And there's nothing that exists that he didn't do. To think that God put all of this in motion. I've often thought about the creation. One of the arguments for the existence of God is the argument from design. Another is the argument from beauty, and there are various types of arguments that people make. But Oren and I have talked about it. Oren, of course, has done a lot more science stuff than I have, but when Oren was working on a molecular level and looking at DNA and things, you know, he was always fascinated by the intricacy and the detail and everything that's there. And then for us, we'll look at expanse and how far things go. And you know, I read some article that they think there may be a planet beyond Pluto now, which I don't know. know what good that does me, but they think it may be out there, you know, and I'm shocked that it's still, you know, they still find things. It's not something they can see. They think based on the movement of other things that there has to be something there fooling with the gravity. But you know, God could have created a world that was all black and white. Have you ever thought about what a gift color is to us? Some of you love the color of pheasant feathers. Can you imagine if it was only black and white? How much would we lose in our world if the Creator of everything hadn't said, let's make it special for him. Let's make it unique. And you know, the colors are all the incandescent stuff, you know, the stuff you look at and you go, wow, that's really, really different. Jesus did all of that for you. So, Genesis, we have the beginning of creation. John introduces this book talking about a recreation. See, John says that God has hit a reset button when he sends Jesus. The Hebrew writer says, God spoke to the fathers and the prophets by many portions and in many ways, but now in these last days he has spoken unto us in his Son, whom he made the heir of all things, and through whom he created the world. I've mentioned to you before that when I was a kid, my grandparents, when I was in first grade, I lived with my maternal grandparents, and they had a Seth Thomas clock. And that clock would chime on the quarter hour, and then on the hour it would tell you what time it was. And I always remember as a kid going to bed and then waking up in the middle of the night and you'd hear the sound of the clock, and it would do something like bong, 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 bong. Bong, bong, bong. And then you would count the number of strikes of the clock to figure out the hour. But sometimes, as a child, I would wake up and I'd just be hearing it going, bong, bong. And I'd realize that I missed the first part or I wasn't paying attention to it. So what time is it? Now, did I hear the first sound or not? And I don't know for sure every time it hits. I'm just getting closer to knowing. And so if it's 11 o'clock, I might count to 8, but I don't have the accurate information yet because I have to get to the end to know. In the Old Testament, before Jesus came, people were constantly getting closer to knowing who God was. When Isaiah stood up and said, hey, it's like this, or Elijah stood up and said, it's like this, each piece of it was giving them some part of the puzzle, a little bit of understanding about God. But the Hebrew writer says, and finally God said, they're not getting it. And so he sends Jesus, who is the exact representation of his nature. And it was troublesome for religious folk of his day, because frankly, they didn't think God was quite like Jesus. And they got confused, because Jesus did some things that God wouldn't do. Jesus was more concerned about somebody with a withered right hand than he was about keeping the Sabbath. And they said, well, we know you're not from God because God's all about the Sabbath. And Jesus said, no, no. God is all about people. The Sabbath was made for you. You weren't made for the Sabbath. See, people didn't know that until that time. So Jesus comes in and he hits a big reset. Now, that's the history. So when he alludes to Genesis 1 in this book by giving us this information, what he's saying, in essence, is there's a new creation about to happen. We're going to start over. And he keeps using that kind of image by saying, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. One of the trips that we went to one of the caverns, I cheated. When they shut the lights out, the dial on my watch gave a little bit of light. And so I looked at that, and it was amazing how bright it was in a place with no light at all. And do you remember when they finally turned that little $3 flashlight on down there? I mean, that's not much of a flashlight that guy's carrying with him. Turns it on and it looks like it's, you know, 11,000 candle power in this room when it's nothing. But it's the only light present. And no matter how weak the light, it's stronger than the darkness. Doesn't matter how dim your light is, it always overwhelms the darkness. In fact, darkness doesn't have the power to overwhelm light. How much more darkness do you add to a room to make the light go out? Well, you can't add darkness and do that. And Jesus comes into the world and he is the light, the very life of men. And no matter how many stand up against him, they're not able to overcome him or take him away. But what's that mean for us? In imagery, it means a lot of things. I've known some of you your whole life. I've known some of you 20 years. I've known some of you 32 or 3 years. What I know about you is you're a mess. You're a wreck. You could, just like I could, go back and look at places in your life that you're not proud of. Places where you didn't do well. Places that you weren't on your A game, you may not even have been on your Z game. And you can find them in my life. John says, you can reset. As wrong as people were about what God wanted, Jesus came and said, I can show you again. You can start over. You can have new life. You let light in to your life, and there's no amount of darkness that can dim it. You just have to open up to the light. You just have to let it
come in. And so our movement is always toward this righteousness, this better thing. Even when everything in our world screams, don't do that, they're going to get you. Don't you dare ignore what they did, because they'll really make you suffer next time. You know, don't forgive that debt. Don't let them buy without paying you every last dime that's owed you. Well, let light come. Let God do some things. And we may think, I don't know how I'm going to do it. You're not. It's going to be God's Spirit in you doing things. That's the good news that Jesus brings. Now, back to our lesson last week, John brings it in and says, look, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. And he came as a witness to bear witness about the light. Now, remember, he started out by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And so the first theme is this notion of the Word. But now then, he says, and that light was the life of, or that life of, life was the light of men. And now he's transitioned to a new image. And now he's going to talk about light and how important light is. And we just went through last year looking at light, God being light, out of 1 John. Notice this theme moves again through a different book. He says, he came to bear witness about the light that everyone might believe through him. He was not the light. He was incredibly popular. People came from far and wide, from every major city, pulling out in the wilderness to hear what John was going to say. And they had a great time listening to him because he was funny. He was unique. He was odd. He dressed like a wild man. He looked like a wild man. And he didn't cut any slack to the religious goody-two-shoes. He called them broods of vipers and warned them that they were not going to be able to flee from the gates of hell unless they brought about some kind of fruit of repentance. He, when they agreed to submit to his baptism, he says, you show me that it's what you really want by the way you live your life. Come back later and we'll talk about it. I mean, not the kind of thing you think that most people are going to do. He came to bear witness about the light. And this is the testimony of John. When the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who are you? He confessed and immediately, he doesn't deny. He says, look, I am not the Christ. I'm not the one you guys are waiting on. Remember last week I told you about all of those people who had showed up earlier in this same period of time saying, hey, I'm the Christ. I'm the one. And we find out that Gamaliel says, when the leaders were overthrown, they came to nothing. John says, don't mistake me for the light. But I can tell you about him. I can tell you who he is. I can point you to him. And they said, well, if you aren't the Christ, are you Elijah? Because they know that the spokesman Elijah is going to come ahead of the prophet. He says, are you the prophet? Remember in Deuteronomy, Moses says, I've got to leave. But remember that God is going to raise up for you a prophet like me. And you need to listen to everything that he says. And this is the reference that they're going back to. This is a prophecy from Deuteronomy. See, God's going to bring you a prophet. So they say, hey, are you the prophet? You the one Moses was talking about? He says, that's not me. It's not who I am. Well, who are you? You're giving us all of this information, all of this good stuff. You're telling us everything about God, but you're saying you're not the Messiah. We need to give an answer to those who sent us. What do you have to say about yourself? And he said, I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as the prophet Isaiah said. Now, immediately their minds would connect to this verse because they're looking for this guy. And he says, I'm that voice. But I'm not these other people you're talking about. But I can point him out. They had been sent from the Pharisees, and they asked him, says, why are you baptizing folks if you aren't the Christ or the Elijah or the prophet? John doesn't give them that answer. When they say, why are you baptizing folks, they're actually asking him about his authority and his credibility. By what right do you do this if you're not the prophet or Elijah? And he says, well, understand the kind of baptism that I'm doing. I'm baptizing folks with water. But right now in the midst of you, there is one who stands that you don't even know. And when he comes after me, I'm not even going to be worthy of tying his shoes. And so all of these people are saying, who is this guy? Who's this one that you're going to tell us about? And John is setting the beginning of his book up so that you will say, okay, what's he talking about? Who's he talking about? They know the story, but John's writing it in such a fashion that they're on the edge of their seats looking to find out what he means. John's doing something that we would see kind of in a different way. You know, when great storytellers start telling stories, there's certain things that kind of ring familiar to us. My favorite storyteller is a man by the name of Garrison Keillor. He's about to retire. I'm just in great sadness over it. He tells stories about Lake Wobegon. Lake Wobegon is the place where what's the opening line? Men are strong, women are good looking, and the children are above average. Okay, and he uses the same phrase every time. It's that phrase that makes you realize he's entering into his story. Maybe in your life, someone used to tell you stories by starting with, once upon a time. And when you heard the phrase, once upon a time, you immediately started thinking, okay, this is going to get good. Let's get ready. My grandmother would tell me tales of Texas. And she always began them was one of the heroes in the nation of Texas was. And then I would be ready to listen to the hero. Who is this person? John is saying, let me tell you about Jesus. Let me start with John. And so he moves almost through this first chapter without really telling you about Jesus. So that he builds your anticipation. So you'll say, who is this guy? What's he like? What's he do? That question is really important. In fact, it's the question that every single one of us needs to ask ourselves, who is this guy? What do you believe about Jesus? There are folks who take Jesus very, very minimally. They believe he taught a lot of good stuff. They believe he was wise, smart, that he gave some odd commands, but they don't see him as someone that causes them to reset their lives. But John's telling you, it's time to begin again. And he's giving hope to us. He lets us know that no matter the level of darkness in you, no matter how ashamed you are of your past, no matter what great iniquity you've done, that light always overpowers darkness. So we're a people who believe in change. We believe that God can make us different. And as John introduces this Savior who makes a difference in the world, that's the thing I encourage you to think about yourself. How are you going to let this Messiah make you different? You'll have to give things up, beginning with your control. But let him feed you. So as we look at his life this year, that's the thing that I want to encourage you to do, is to begin to give up and let him regulate your life. If we can help you be who Jesus calls you to be, all you need to do is come as together we stand and sing.